Chapter 2. At first, Richard stood frozen, not knowing what to do. He couldn't be sure the four men really were stalking the woman, at least not until it was too late. What business was it of his anyway? And besides, he didn't even have his knife with him. What chance did one man with no weapon have against four? He watched the woman making her way along the path. He watched the men follow. What chance did the woman have? He crouched, muscles tight and hard. His heart raced as he tried to think of what he could do. The morning sun was hot on his face, his breathing rapid with fear. Richard knew there was a small cut-off from Hawker's trail somewhere ahead of the woman. Hurriedly, he tried to remember exactly where. The main fork to her left continued around the lake and up the hill to his left, to where he stood and watched. If she stayed on the main trail, he could wait for her, then tell her about the men. Then what? Besides, that was too long. The men would be on her before then. An idea began to take shape. He sprang up and started running down the trail. If he could reach her before the men caught her, and before the cutoff, he could take her up the right fork. That trail led up out of the trees onto open ledges, away from the boundary, and toward the town of Heartland, toward help. If they were quick, he could hide their tracks. The men wouldn't know that the two of them had taken the side trail. They would think she was still on the main trail, at least for a while, long enough to fool them and lead her to safety. Still winded from the earlier run, Richard panted in labored breaths, running down the trail as fast as he could go. The path had quickly turned back into the trees, so at least he didn't have to worry about the men being able to see him. Shafts of sunlight flashed by as he raced along. Old pine trees lined the path, leaving a soft mat of needles to cushion his footfalls. After a time, driving himself headlong down the path, he started looking for the side trail. He couldn't be sure how far he had gone. The forest offered no view for a fix, and he didn't remember exactly where the cutoff was. It was small and would be easy to miss. With every bend bringing new hope that this would be the place he found the cutoff, he pushed himself on. He tried to think of what he would say to the woman when he finally reached her. His mind raced as fast as his legs. She might think he was with her pursuers, or be frightened by him, or not believe him. He wouldn't have much time to convince her to go with him, that he wanted to help. Coming over the top of a small rise, he looked anew for the fork, but didn't see it and kept running. Now his breath came in ragged gasps. He knew that if he didn't reach the split before she did, they would be trapped, and their only options would be to outrun the men or to fight. He was too winded for either. That thought drove him on harder. Sweat ran down his back, making his shirt stick to his skin. The coolness of the morning had turned to choking heat, though he knew it was only his exertion that made it seem that way. The forest passed in a blur to each side as he ran. Just before a sharp bend to the right, he came at last to the cutoff, almost missing it. He made a quick search for tracks to see if she had been there and taken the small path. There were none. Relief washed over him. He dropped to his knees and sat back on his heels in exhaustion, trying to catch his breath. The first part had worked. He had beaten her here. Now he had to make her believe him before it was too late. Holding his right hand over a painful stitch in his side and still trying to catch his breath, he started to worry that he was going to look silly. What if it was just a girl and her brothers playing a game? He would be the fool. Everyone but him would have a good laugh. He looked down at the bite on the back of his hand. It was red and throbbed painfully. He remembered the thing in the sky. He thought about the way she had been walking, with a sense of purpose, not like a child at play. It was a woman, not a girl. He remembered the cold fear he had felt when he saw the four men. Four men warily shadowing a woman, the third strange thing to happen this morning. The third child of trouble. No, he shook his head. This was no game. He knew what he had seen. It was no game. They were stalking her. Richard came partway to his feet. Waves of heat rolled from his body. Bent over at the waist with his hands braced on his knees, he took a few deep breaths before straightening to his full height. His eyes fell on the young woman as she came around the bend in front of him. His breath caught for an instant. Her brown hair was full, lush, and long, complementing the contours of her body. She was tall, almost as tall as he, and about the same age. The dress she wore was like none he had ever seen, almost white, cut square at the neck, interrupted only by a small tan leather waist pouch. The weave of the fabric was fine and smooth, almost glistening, and bore none of the lace or frills he was used to seeing. No prints or colors to distract from the way it caressed her form. The dress was elegant in its simplicity. She halted, and long, graceful folds, regally trailing her, gathered about her legs. Richard approached and stopped 3 strides away so as not to appear a threat. She stood straight and still, her arms at her side. Her eyebrows had the graceful arch of a raptor's wings in flight. Her green eyes came unafraid to his. The connection was so intense that it threatened to drain his sense of self. He felt that he had always known her, that she had always been a part of him, that her needs were his needs. She held him with her gaze as surely as a grip of iron would, searching his eyes as if searching his soul, seeking an answer to something. "I am here to help you," he said in his mind. He meant it more than any thought he had ever had. The intensity of her gaze relaxed, loosening its hold on him. In her eyes he saw something that attracted him more than anything else, intelligence. He saw it flaring there, burning in her, and through it all he felt an overriding sense of her integrity. Richard felt safe. A warning flashed in his mind, making him remember why he was there. The time was dear. "I was up there," he pointed toward the hill he had been on, "and I saw you." She looked where he pointed. He looked too and realized he was pointing at a tangle of tree limbs. They couldn't see the hill because the trees blocked the view. He dropped his arm, dumbly, trying to ignore the miscue. Her eyes returned to his, waiting. Richard started over, keeping his voice low. "I was up there on a hill, above the lake. I saw you walking on the path by the shore. There are some men following you." She betrayed no emotion, but continued to hold his gaze. "How many?" He thought her question strange, but answered it. "4. The color drained from her face. She turned her head, surveying the woods behind her, scanning the shadows briefly, then looked back to him once more, her green eyes searching his. "Do you choose to help me?" Except for her color, her exquisite features gave no hint as to her emotions. Before his mind could form a thought, he heard himself say, "Yes." Her countenance softened. "What would you have us do?" "There's a small trail that turns off here. If we take it, and they stay on this one, we can be away." "And if they don't? If they follow our trail?" "I'll hide our tracks." He was shaking his head, trying to reassure her. "They won't follow. Look, there's no time." "If they do," she cut him off. "Then what is your plan?" He studied her face a moment. "Are they very dangerous?" She stiffened. "Very." The way she spoke the word made him have to force himself to breathe again. For an instant, he saw a look of blind terror pass across her eyes. Richard ran his fingers through his hair. "Well, the small trail is narrow and sheer. They won't be able to surround us." "Do you have a weapon?" He answered by shaking his head no, too angry with himself for forgetting his knife to voice it out loud. She nodded. "Let's be quick, then." They didn't talk once the decision had been made, not wanting to give away their location. Richard hurriedly concealed their tracks and motioned her to go first so he would be between her and the men. She didn't hesitate. The folds of her dress flowed behind as she moved quickly at his direction. The lush, young evergreens of the Venn pressed tight at their sides, making the path a narrow, dark, green, walled route cut through the brush and branches. They could see nothing around them. Richard checked behind as they went, though he couldn't see far. At least what he could see was clear. She went swiftly, without any encouragement from him. After a time, the ground started rising and becoming rockier, and the trees thinned, offering a more open view. The trail twisted along deeply shaded cuts in the terrain and across leaf-strewn ravines, dry leaves scattered at their passing. Pines and spruce gave way to hardwood trees, mostly white birch, and as the limbs swayed overhead, little patches of sunlight danced on the forest floor. The birch's white trunks with black spots made it look as if hundreds of eyes were watching the two pass. Other than the raucous racket of some ravens, it was a very quiet, peaceful place. At the base of a granite wall that the path followed, he motioned to her, putting a finger over his lips, letting her know they had to step carefully to avoid making sounds that would echo their location. Whenever a raven cawed, he could hear it reverberate through the hills. Richard knew this place. The shape of the rock wall could carry a sound for miles. He pointed to the moss-covered round rocks littering the flat forest floor. He showed her that he meant for the two of them to step on the rocks to avoid snapping sticks hidden under the leaf litter. He moved some leaves to show her sticks hidden there and pretended to break them, then cupped his hand to his ear. She nodded her understanding, lifted her skirts with one hand, and began to step up on the rocks. He touched her arm to make her look back again, and mimed slipping and falling, to let her know she had to be careful because the moss was slippery. She smiled and nodded again before hurrying on. Seeing her smile was unexpected, and it warmed him, softening the edge of his fear. Richard allowed himself a small dose of confidence about their escape as he stepped from one mossy rock to another. As the path climbed steadily upward, the trees thinned more. The rock taking over from the soil offered trees infrequent opportunity to put down roots. Soon the only trees grew in crevices and were gnarled, twisted, and small, wanting to offer no purchase to the wind that could pull them from their meager anchoring. They slipped quietly out of the trees and onto the ledges. The path wasn't always clearly marked, and there were many false trails. She often had to turn to him, and he directed her by pointing or with a nod of his head. Richard wondered what her name was, but his fear of the four men kept him from talking. Even though the trail was steep and hard, he didn't have to slow on her account. She was a strong climber, and quick. He saw that she wore good boots of soft leather, the kind of boots worn by one used to traveling. It had been well over an hour since they had come out of the trees, climbing steadily upward into the sun. They were heading east on the ledges before the trail cut back to the west later. The men, if they had followed, would have to look into the sun to see them. Richard kept them crouched as low as possible and checked over his shoulder often as they climbed, scanning for any sign of the men. When he had seen them by Trunt Lake, they were staying well hidden, but it was too open out here for them to hide. He saw nothing and started to feel better. They weren't being followed. The men were nowhere to be seen and were probably miles down Hawker's Trail by now. The farther from the boundary and the closer to town they got, the better he felt. His plan had worked. Seeing no sign that they were being followed, Richard wished they could stop for a rest, as his hand was throbbing. But she gave no sign that she needed or wanted a break. She kept pushing on as if the men were right on their heels. Richard remembered the look on her face when he had asked if they were dangerous, and quickly rejected any thought of stopping. As morning wore on, the day became warm for this late in the year. The sky was a bright, clear blue with only a few white, wispy clouds drifting by. One of the clouds had taken on the undulating form of a snake, with its head down and tail up. Because it was so unusual, Richard remembered seeing the same cloud earlier in the day. Or was it yesterday? He would have to remember to mention it to Zed the next time he saw him. Zed was a cloud reader, and if Richard failed to report his sighting, he would have to endure an hour-long lecture on the significance of clouds. Zed was probably watching it this very moment, fretting over whether or not Richard was paying attention. The path took them to the south face of Small Blunt Mountain, where it crossed a sheer cliff face for which the mountain was named. Crossing the cliff near mid-height, the trail offered a panoramic view of the southern Venn Forest and, to their left, in cloud and mist, almost hidden behind the cliff wall, the high, rugged peaks belonging to the boundary. Richard saw brown, dying trees standing out against the carpet of green. Up closer to the boundary, the dead trees were thick. It was the vine, he realized. The two of them advanced quickly across the cliff trail. They were so clearly in the open, with no chance to hide, that anyone could spot them easily. But across the cliff, the trail would begin to head down into the Heartland Woods, and then into town. Even if the men did figure out their mistake and follow, Richard and the woman had a safe lead. As it neared the far side of the cliff face, the path started to broaden from its treacherous narrow width to a space wide enough for two to walk side by side. Richard trailed his right hand along the rock wall for reassurance while looking over the side to the boulder fields several hundred feet below. He turned and checked behind. Still clear. As he turned back, she froze in mid-stride, the folds of her dress swirling around her legs. In the trail ahead, that only a moment earlier had been empty, stood two of the men. Richard was bigger than most men. These men were much bigger than he. Their dark green hooded cloaks shaded their faces but couldn't conceal their heavily muscled bulk. Richard's mind raced, trying to conceive of how the men could have gotten ahead of them. Richard and the woman spun, prepared to run. From the rock above, two ropes dropped down and the other two men plummeted to the path, landing on their feet with heavy thuds. They blocked any retreat. They were as big as the first two. Buckles and leather straps beneath their cloaks held an arsenal of weapons that glinted in the sunlight. Richard wheeled back to the first two. They calmly pushed their hoods back. Each had thick blonde hair and a thick neck. Their faces were rugged, handsome.
"You may pass, boy. Our business is with the girl."
The man's voice was deep, almost friendly. Nonetheless, the threat was as sharp as a blade. He removed his leather gloves and tucked them in his belt as he spoke, not bothering to look at Richard. He obviously didn't consider Richard an obstacle. He appeared to be the one in charge, as the other three waited silently while he spoke. Richard had never been in a situation like this before. He had always managed to avoid trouble. He never allowed himself to lose his temper, and could usually turn scowls to smiles with his easy manner. If talk didn't work, he was quick enough and strong enough to stop threats before anyone was hurt, and if need be, he would simply walk away. He knew these men weren't interested in talking, and they clearly weren't afraid of him. He wished he could walk away now. Richard glanced to her green eyes and saw the visage of a proud woman beseeching his help. He leaned closer and kept his voice low but firm. "I won't leave you." Relief washed over her face. She gave a slight nod as she settled her hand lightly on his forearm. "Keep between them. Don't let them all come at me at once," she whispered. "And be sure you aren't touching me when they come." Her hand tightened on his arm, and her eyes held his, waiting for confirmation that he understood her instructions. He didn't understand her reasons, but gave a small nod of agreement. "May the good spirits be with us," she said. She let her hands drop to her sides, turning to the two behind them, her face dead calm, devoid of emotion.
"Be on your way, boy."
The leader's voice was harder. His fierce blue eyes glared. He gritted his teeth.
"Last time offered."
Richard swallowed hard. He tried to sound sure of himself.
"We will both be passing."
His heart felt as if it were coming up into his throat.
"Not this day," the leader said with finality.
He pulled free a wicked-looking curved knife. The man to his side pulled a short sword clear of the scabbard strapped across his back. With a depraved grin, he drew it across the inside of his muscled forearm, staining the blade red. From behind,
Richard could hear the ring of steel being drawn. He was paralyzed with fear. This was all happening too fast. They had no chance. None. For a brief moment, no one moved. Richard flinched when the four gave the howling battle cries of men prepared to die in mortal combat. They charged in a frightening rush. The one with the short sword swung it high, coming at Richard. He could hear one of the men behind him grab the woman as the man with the sword raced toward him. And then, just before the man reached him, there was a hard impact to the air, like a clap of thunder, with no sound. The violence of it made every joint in his body cry out in sharp pain. Dust lifted around them, spreading outward in a ring. The man with the sword felt the pain of it too, and for an instant his attention was diverted past Richard, to the woman. As he came crashing forward, Richard fell back against the wall and with both feet hit the man square in the chest as hard as he could. It knocked him clear of the path, into midair. The man's eyes went wide in surprise as he dropped backward to the rocks below, the sword still held over his head in both hands. To Richard's shock, he saw one of the other two men from behind him falling through space too, his chest ripped and bloody. Before Richard could give it a thought, the leader with the curved knife charged past, intent on the woman. He hammered the heel of his free hand into the center of Richard's chest. The jolt knocked the wind out of him and flung him hard against the wall, smacking his head against the rock. As he fought to remain conscious, his only thought was that he had to stop the man from getting to her. Summoning strength he didn't know he had, Richard snatched the leader by his husky wrist and spun him around. The knife came around in an arc toward him. The blade flashed in the sunlight. There was a savage hunger in the man's blue eyes. Richard had never been so afraid in his life. In that instant, he knew he was about to die. Seemingly from out of nowhere, the last man, with a short sword covered in gore, smashed into the leader, driving his sword through the other's gut, slamming the wind out of him. The collision was so fierce it carried both over the side of the cliff. All the way down, the last man howled in a cry of rage that ended only when they met the boulders below. Richard stood stunned, staring over the edge. Reluctantly, he turned to the woman, afraid to look, terrified he would see her gashed open and lifeless. Instead, she was sitting on the ground, leaning against the cliff wall, looking drained but unhurt. Her face had a faraway look. It was all over so fast he couldn't understand what had happened or how. Richard and the woman were alone in the sudden silence. He slumped down beside her on rock warm from the sun. He had a powerful headache from having his head whacked on the wall. Richard could see she was all right, so he didn't ask. He felt too overwhelmed to talk and could sense the same in her. She noticed blood on the back of her hand and wiped it off on the wall, adding it to the red splatters already there. Richard thought he might throw up. He couldn't believe they were alive. It didn't seem possible. What was the thunder without sound? And the pain he felt when it had happened? He had never felt anything like it before. He shuddered, recalling it. Whatever it was, she had something to do with it, and it had saved his life. Something unearthly had occurred, and he wasn't at all sure he wanted to know what it was. She leaned her head back against the rock, rolling it to the side, toward him. "I don't even know your name. I wanted to ask before, but I was afraid to talk." She vaguely indicated the drop-off. "I was so frightened of them. I didn't want them to find us." He thought maybe she was about to cry and looked over at her. She wasn't. But he felt that he might. He nodded his understanding of what she said about the men. "My name is Richard Cipher." Her green eyes studied his as he looked over at her, the light breeze carrying some wisps of hair across her face. She smiled. "There are not many who would have stood with me." He found her voice as attractive as the rest of her. It matched the spark of intelligence in her eyes. It almost took his breath away. "You are a very rare person, Richard Cipher." To his intense displeasure, Richard felt his face flush. She looked away, pulling the strands of hair off her face, and pretended not to notice his blushing. "I am..." She sounded as if she was going to say something she then thought better of. She turned back to him. "I am Kalin. My family name is Amnell." He looked into her eyes a long moment. "You, too, are a very rare person, Kalin Amnell. There are not many who would have stood as you did." She did not blush, but gave him another smile. It was an odd sort of smile, a special smile, not showing any teeth, but with her lips pressed together, as one would when taking another into one's confidence. Her eyes sparkled with it. It was a smile of sharing. Richard reached behind, felt the painful lump on the back of his head, and checked his fingers for blood. There was none, though he thought that by all rights there should have been. He looked back at her, again wondering what had happened, wondering what she had done, and how she had done it. There was that thunder with no sound, and he had knocked one of the men off the cliff. One of the two behind him had killed the other instead of her, and then killed the leader and himself. "Well, Kalin, my friend, can you tell me how it is that we are alive and those four men are not?" She looked at him in surprise. "Do you mean that?" "Mean what?" She hesitated. "Friend." Richard shrugged. "Sure. You just said I stood with you. That's the kind of thing a friend does, isn't it?" He gave her a smile. Kalin turned away. "I don't know." She fingered the sleeve of her dress as she looked down. "I have never had a friend before, except maybe my sister." He felt the pain in her voice. "Well, you have one now," he said in his most cheerful tone. "After all, we just went through something pretty frightening together. We helped each other, and we survived." She simply nodded. Richard looked out over the Venn, the forests where he was so at home. Sunlight made the green of the trees vibrant, lush. His eyes were drawn to the left, to spots of brown, the dead and dying trees that stood out among their healthy neighbors. Until that morning, when he found the vine and it bit him, he had had no idea that the vine was up by the boundary, spreading through the woods. He rarely went up into the Venn, that close to the boundary. Older people wouldn't go within miles of it. Others went closer, if they traveled on Hawker's Trail, or to hunt, but none went too close. The boundary was death. It was said that to go into the boundary was not only to die, but to forfeit your soul. The boundary wardens made sure people stayed away. He gave her a sideways glance. "So what about the other part? The part about us being alive. How did that happen?" Kalin didn't meet his gaze. "I think the good spirits protected us." Richard didn't believe a word of it. But as much as he wanted to know the answers, it was against his nature to force someone to tell something she didn't want to. His father had raised him to respect another person's right to keep his own secrets. In her own time, she would tell him her secrets, if she wanted to. But he would not try to force her. Everyone had secrets. He certainly had his own. In fact, with his father's murder and with today's events, he felt those secrets stirring unpleasantly in the back of his mind. "Kalin," he said, trying to make his voice sound reassuring, "being a friend means you don't have to tell me anything you don't want to, and I'll still be your friend." She didn't look at him, but nodded her agreement. Richard got to his feet. His head hurt, his hand hurt, and now he realized his chest hurt where the man had hit him. To top it off, he remembered he was hungry. Michael! He had forgotten about his brother's party. He looked at the sun and knew he was going to be late. He hoped he wouldn't miss Michael's speech. He would take Kalin, tell Michael about the men, and get some protection for her. He held out his hand to help her up. She stared at it in surprise. He continued to hold it out for her. She gazed up into his eyes and took the hand. Richard smiled. Never had a friend give you a hand up before. She averted her eyes. No. Richard could tell she felt uncomfortable, so he changed the subject. When's the last time you had something to eat?
2 days ago,
she said without emotion. His eyebrows went up. Then you must be even more hungry than I am. I'll take you to my brother. He peered over the edge of the cliff. We'll have to tell him about the bodies. He'll know what to do. He turned again to her. Kaelin, do you know who those men were? Her green eyes turned hard. They are called a quad. They are, well, they are like assassins. They are sent to kill... She caught herself again. They kill people. Her face regained the calm countenance it had when he first saw her. I think that maybe the fewer people who know about me, the safer I will be. Richard was startled. He had never heard of anything like this. He ran his fingers through his hair, trying to think. Dark, shadowy thoughts started to swirl again. For some reason, he was terrified of what she might say, but had to ask. He looked hard into her eyes, expecting the truth this time. Kaelin, where did the quad come from? She studied his face a moment. They must have tracked me out of the Midlands and through the boundary. Richard's skin went cold, and prickles bumped up along his arms in a wave that rolled up to the back of his neck, making the fine hairs there stand stiffly out. An anger deep within him awakened, and his secret stirred. She had to be lying. No one could cross the boundary. No one. No one could go into or come out of the Midlands. The boundary had sealed it away since before he was born. The Midlands was a land of magic.